Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. The show is heard on WBCQ The Planet every Tuesday and Friday nights, Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Friday, I believe, it's on at 7 p.m. That was just added recently, a second day, and I appreciate that. You can also hear us on Podomatic. Just go to podomatic.com and plug in Camp Constitution Radio, and you'll be able to get many of our archive programs. I think we've had almost 150 or close to that. So we don't have all of them on there, but we have quite a few of them. And you can download, free download, and make it available. And we do encourage you to support this station, WBCQ The Planet, and look into doing your own broadcasting. And the owner of the station makes, you could just send them a one, you know, demo tape or whatever you want to call it, and you know, for a short amount of money, you can have it played. So just go to WBCQ.com, I think, and you'll be able to get that information. Also, the show was heard, Camp Constitution Radio was also heard on IPMNation.org, and that's Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is a 24-hour online source of talk and news. And they do this as a courtesy for us, so we do appreciate that. And also, morning, YouTube. Al. Hey, Tom, glad you make it. Well, I might just introduce my co-host instead of a guest, as Tom has been on the show quite a lot. Tom is one of the instructors at Camp Constitution. He is a historian, and we're very and a good friend of mine. So, Tom, good to have you on.
Yes, and a happy Lincoln's birthday to you, Hal.
That's
I guess
right.
Now these days we have this thing called President's Day. In the past, the several states recognized either Washington, Lincoln, or both, as if all presidents are the same, as if Obama is just as good as George Washington, which he was not.
Well, it's interesting. Last week I did a show on Black history, which, of course, I'm of the opinion that history doesn't have a color. People who may be Black or white or Puerto Rican or whatever make history. At the same time, I do acknowledge that there a lot of people have not been as well known historically. And that could be, presidents and generals and admirals get most of the media, and, people who are lesser known don't. And, I used to have a friend at work, a Black friend at work when I worked in the post office, and he was a good guy, but he had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder on occasions. And he would say, well, the history books are written by white people. And I said to him, name me the Black man who was killed at the Boston Massacre. He said, Crispus Attucks. I said, no, name the whites. And he didn't know them. So you see, it works both ways. And I think you got a point there, Hal. Anyway, but it's actually Black History Week started with this particular week, because February 12th was Lincoln's birthday and the 14th was Frederick Douglass's birthday. And I thought that was pretty interesting. And then it was Gerald Ford in 1976 that decided to make it Black History Month. He passed a resolution or passed a proclamation. But and the sad thing is our culture is controlled by the left, the media, the print media, the major media, the academia. So many of the Black people they promote are socialists or people who were not pro-American, pro-limited government, or had a strong Christian background, with few exceptions. I'll grant that there are some exceptions. It was interesting, Tom. A friend of mine, he used to be my next-door neighbor, Peter Gadzoulas. He lives in the Roxbury section of Boston. And the house he owned, that he owns now, was owned by this Black couple. And they both were educators. And he's given me their library. I guess they passed away, and he got their library. And there were some phenomenal books in this library. One of them was a book published in 1878 by the first cadet, a Black cadet at West Point. And then there was a book, it was called Without Prejudice or Without, anyway, 1943. And I did a little research, and it was autographed by the author, who was a Nigerian prince who came to Boston when he was a young man and educated. And he wrote the book to his friend, Roland Hayes. I said, who's Roland Hayes? Now, Hayes is a relatively common name. Well, Roland Hayes was an accomplished musician, composer. He was the first Black man hired by the Boston Symphony Orchestra. He died in 1977. Lived a long, distinguished life. And I said, oh, my goodness, it's just a treasure trove of information you know, getting five more boxes. So I'm really looking forward to going through it and seeing what gems. And I'm learning a lot, too. And I would imagine if you go to the average American and average Black American and ask these questions, most of them wouldn't know who you're talking about. And so it's not up to the government, by the way, to teach history. It's up to the individual to learn it. You know, I went to
a public
school.
I have a few points on that. I just wanted to say we are Camp Constitution, so I'm going to make a few constitutional points. The only place where the word slavery appears in our Constitution is in its prohibition in the 13th Amendment, which Lincoln really was very, very much responsible for. It wasn't for him, and boy, he went through a lot to get it through. And here it is. It's very brief, unlike the laws of today. Neither
That's
slavery
right.
nor involuntary servitude, except as punishment for a crime whereof the party shall be have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Now, I'm also going to say, you know, because these things should be injected into the argument. The original Declaration of Independence of Thomas Jefferson, before it was edited, I'm going to just read a little passage here, and it was edited out because they couldn't get it in with this. But here's what Jefferson said in very stringent terms. The King of Great Britain determined to keep open a market where men should be bought and sold. He has prostituted his negative for suppressing every legislative attempt to prohibit or restrain this execrable commerce, and that this assemblage of horrors might want no fact of distinguished dye. And then he talks about how the slaves were now promised their freedom by Britain if they would attack the colonists. But it was very, very hard, if not impossible, to free your slaves in those days in the southern colonies. But Jefferson really tried, and then they tried again at the Constitution, and at least they said that the trade would be outlawed by 1808, and
what's fascinating? There's a lot of people that my eighth grade history teacher, whom I adored, Mrs. Wolf. I don't know if she was a liberal or conservative, but she had a great love of our history and our Constitution, and she did say, and she was wrong. She said that the Constitution upheld slavery in Article 1 when it comes to the census, that blacks would be considered five blacks for every three. And if you read that really quickly, you say, yeah, that's a sore spot. However, it was really just the opposite, because you have to take things in context. At that time, there were only two states that had abolished slavery, Massachusetts and Pennsylvania, I think, just the two states at that time. All the other states in the North had slavery, but they were small slave populations compared to the larger population of South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia. So the Southern delegates in these states with large slave populations said, we want to count everybody. And that means we would have more representation in Congress. It was based on so many people per state. And the North said, well, you know, you don't count these people as citizens. You know, they're considered property. They're not fully, they're not free people or anything. So no, we shouldn't count them at all. And so they made the compromise. It was either no Constitution or the three-fifths. And you're right, and the Constitution did say that the importation of slavery would end by 1808. In fact, they passed a law in 1807, and it was signed, and that was that. And it was enforced, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't it the death penalty if you were involved in the slave trade, if you were caught in the U.S. Property involved in slavery. It was a very severe penalty. I believe it was the death penalty. So they took it serious.
Yeah, that I don't know. And the father of our country, this is interesting, and I was surprised. I've done a little research this week and looking forward to maybe speaking a bit on Facebook in our presentation tomorrow night. Here's what George Washington said. I can only say there is not a man living who wishes more sincerely than I do to see a plan adopted for the abolition of slavery. But there is only one proper and effectual mode by which it can be accomplished, and that is by legislative authority. And this, as far as my vote and support will go, shall never be wanting. So what I found out about Virginia was you could not just free a slave. I mean, there were laws prohibiting it. So Washington didn't like the slave traffic, so he didn't sell any of his slaves.
And he, by the way, had inherited those slaves from his brother's estate.
Yes, and so he provided for their manumission when Martha died, I believe. And
the thing is, too, But
you couldn't just, you could not just free the slaves in those states. And the laws actually got more stringent after that, you know, after that generation, as we moved into the antebellum period. So it was even harder for Jefferson to do that. But they both tried in the Virginia legislature to effect a freedom for the slaves, but they were just, they were outgunned, you know. But it's important to know that Washington was against slavery too, you know, and it's hard to see things in their historical perspective. You know, we just see everything is like just in a politically correct perspective, which doesn't, you know, take into context the zeitgeist or the spirit of the times at all.
And not only that, but there is this notion that all the slavery was started by white Americans or white Europeans against black Africans. And I think it was Thomas Sowell who said recently that it wasn't a question of their black skin, it was a question of their availability. And slavery was something that's been unique to the fall of man. It didn't start in 1776, and it hasn't ended. Even to this day, there are slaves in different parts of the world, or if they're not outright slaves that are owned, they are controlled by their government, and in many respects not slaves in the chattel sense of private property, but have very little freedoms and liberties. And you could say that the history of mankind has been the history of slavery of some degree or another. And as I point out, the United States, to my knowledge, was one of the few of only countries where a civil war, or you can call it a whatever you want to call it, civil war or a war between the states or what have you, where the result was the end of chattel slavery.
Right.
You know, so and that may not have been the basis of everybody's actions. I think some people got involved because, you know, there's people down south, they were just fighting. They looked at it and say, this is my home, I'm just fighting for. They weren't diehard pro-slavers. You can't imagine, you know, I was visited Appomattox Courthouse a few months ago, and there was a sad story. There was this one young soldier. He was from Mississippi. He was, you know, he enlisted with a zeal, we're going to fight the Yankees. They have no business. But, well, you agree with them or not, the poor guy died the day before the surrender. And he went through privations and, you know, all of the away from home, you know, camp life was pretty hard. Even if you weren't getting shot at or shooting back, it was still pretty rough. And he died. And I said, don't tell me that this guy spent 5 years or 4 years dealing with these horrors of war because he just wanted slavery so badly. You just can't sell me on that one, you know. So people have different motivations.
There's one story I'd like to add before we get off of Appomattox, and that was there was a Native American Union soldier present. And so as Robert E. Lee was signing the surrender papers, he looked up and he says, well, at least there is one true American among us. And Parker said back to him, he said, General Lee, we are all true Americans.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
He was of the Seneca tribe of New York, I think.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I think I'm familiar with that story. Yeah. Yeah. That's incredible. Well, yeah, Tom, there's a lot. That's one reason why we exist as Camp Constitution and have this radio show and try to reach out to people is to teach people about the Constitution and preserve it. And I do have some good news. Believe it or not, you're going to hear some good news here. Last week, Idaho rejected very soundly an Article 5 convention, a group called Convention of States, which we've talked about quite a bit on this show. They had their, you know, they were in overdrive with their lobbyists and their money and their campaigns and what have you. And they were shocked that the committee voted 10-5. And it was and in Virginia, I believe they tabled the resolution again. Every year it comes up and every year either votes voted down or tabled. And in Maine, there was a resolution dealing with term limits. And of course, as we have explained on the show before, you cannot limit a convention to one amendment or one topic. It just can't be done. Article 5 doesn't call for that. But I got some good news. I was unable to testify at that event, but I got some good news. But we had, you know, I was notifying people and what have you. Anyway, a lot of people presented testimony, and we understand that the committee chairman is against an Article 5 convention for any reason, and more than half the people in that committee soundly rejected. So it looks like it will go down in defeat there. But South Dakota, as we speak, they're debating on it. And, you know, regard, it was interesting, too. I did an email blast, and one of the state reps gets back to me. And see, this is the emotional appeal, Tom, that we get to deal with. The person said, I trust the convention more than I would trust Congress. You know, Congress is the problem. Well, think about that. Congress is the problem, but Congress can't do anything without the president signing off on it. So the president's the problem, too, is what the person was saying. And you've got four delegates, or three, South Dakota. I said, three. What have you done, you know, to rein in your delegates? They're all Republicans, and they're all moderates. They don't vote very, you know, look at their voting record. It's, you know, they all get failing grades. And so that you keep on sending these same people to do the wrong thing. And, you know, I got a chance to meet the former senator of Oklahoma, Tom Coburn. And he was hired by Convention of States to travel around the country to testify. Now, he's a very likable guy. You know, he's not like Mike Farris or Mechler, the founder, kind of arrogant and, you know, not very decent people, in my opinion. But Tom Coburn's just the opposite. I had a nice chat with him, and he's a strong pro-lifer. He was the last one to testify at this event, at this hearing. And afterwards, you know, I had a discussion with him, and he talked about, well, there are two constitutions. He said one of the constitutions is, you know, the one with these 27 amendments and 7 articles. The other one is the annotated constitution that's 2,000 pages that deals with Supreme Court decisions and blah, 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 blah. So I said, well, Senator, which constitution did you use when you voted for the Bush bailout? And I don't think anybody in this committee knew about. I didn't have a chance to, you know, testify afterwards. Testimony was over. So he did admit he did the wrong thing. But look at this. So here's a man that was sent by his constituents to uphold the Constitution, to do what was right. The most important vote he may have taken in his 6 years or 12 years in the Senate was this. And he failed. He failed miserably. He voted for it, and then he defended the vote by saying something like the ATM machine would go dry if he didn't do this. Now he admits he's wrong. Well, what's preventing someone like, if he was a delegate to a convention, would he do the wrong thing again? We can't trust him. How can we trust unknown delegates to this convention? So I think that's important to point out. But let's get back to the presidents, too. I think it's very important. Yeah, we used to celebrate George Washington's birthday. I mean, people used to actually, there used to be George Washington cards. People would mail people cards, you know, happy George Washington's birthday. You'd learn about this, in my opinion, that he was right. The greatest American that was ever born, in my opinion.
I actually know two people that were born on Washington's birthday that were named George Washington as their first middle name. It used to be, I guess, sort of a tradition. And they were born in different – one was born here in Massachusetts. He's still alive. And the other one was my friend George Washington Yancey, who was born in southern Indiana. On the 22nd of February. Yeah.
If I looked at – when I look at my family genealogy, there's a few George Washingtons, George Washington shirtless, you know.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, that's a hard thing to live up to, isn't it?
I tell you a really funny thing. I was driving through – the state of Washington on I-90 in the middle of the night. I was kind of tired, and I passed an exit that said George, and it didn't hit me right away. I thought George Washington. That's the town of George Washington, I-90. I thought, wow, somebody had a sense of humor there.
Not George Washington, Washington. George Washington. Yeah, that's
very
clever.
And there's a picture of George Washington on the flag of the state of Washington. It's a green flag with George Washington's picture in the middle.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah, I think it was this notion, like you said earlier, that all presidents were equal and that we celebrate President's Day. And I think it's part of our culture, the destruction of our culture. No, I mean, we can't celebrate 45 presidents. So people, was Grover Cleveland that served two non-consecutive terms, the 22nd and 24th. Well, we can't have a holiday for everybody because we would never have a work day. I'm sure some people
right.
Wouldn't mind that, right? You know, but I think that you should honor certain people. And if you want to honor your favorite president, it may not be my favorite president. That's what comp days are for. Take a vacation day and go celebrate, you know, but don't expect everybody else to. But the thing is, it's become really a 3-day weekend to buy automobiles. You know, it doesn't. We don't learn about the presidents. We don't learn about our history. We want to buy a car or go on a weekend package deal. You know, go on a weekend ski trip if you live in the Northeast. Or, you know, that's what a 3-day weekend is. It's not about, you know, we have Memorial Day. Well, what's that supposed to be about? You know, well, we don't know anymore. But we know if you live in Boston, you go to Cape Cod for the weekend. You know, and come back before
right.
the rush hour.
That's
got nothing to do
with
it.
Our Constitution starts with the words. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, and all those things were done for our union. So I'm going to be teaching a course on the union, or a class on the union at Camp Constitution. I just want to say a few things about the union today. As it's mentioned in the Constitution, it's there in the preamble, which is marvelous. On our flag, most people don't know, the part of the flag where the stars are on the blue field, that is called the union. And it started as the flag of George Washington's headquarters during the American Independence War. That's how it was. And he was a very strong unionist, and he traveled. He made a point to travel to all the 13 states as president to instill pride in being America, because that wasn't very strong in those days. People had a lot of local prejudices, but he wanted us to think of ourselves as Americans. And he really was a great example for that. And that preamble is followed up pretty much in the Gettysburg Address. I'm just going to read the very last line, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, which it did, and the government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. And that was Lincoln. Lincoln, say what you want about him. He was of the people. He was born the poorest of the presidents, and he rose to that he rose to that high office. Trump is a little bit more like George Washington in that he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, but then he made something of himself, and he made even a greater fortune on his own. And I think he's definitely one of us, though. He's definitely one of we the people, and all the things he's done, Hal, has really confirmed that. Recently, his speaking to the Right to Life people was just really amazing, and always talking about God in every single speech. I'm very impressed with our current president.
Well, you know, Washington himself, he was land rich, but he actually had to borrow money to travel to New York to be inaugurated. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it wasn't, it wasn't like he had tons of money, and they still had to work hard to maintain that level. But Trump, you know, he did have his father was wealthy, and he just sort of, in many cases, the sons of the wealthy end up spending all their sons' wealth, all their the wealth that his father accumulated. He did just the opposite. He multiplied it greatly, The bottom line is that, you know, there's issues with Trump. There's no perfect man. I agree. And I I'll criticize him where the criticism is due. But it's nice to see a president who comes to he actually didn't attend the pro-life event. He did a live remote, probably for security reasons more than anything else. And I thought that was phenomenal. Now, I understand that Reagan, somebody said that this is the first time a president ever addressed the right to life. But somebody said, no, Reagan did. I'm not sure if that's the case or not, but it was still encouraging to see promoting life.
Which was a promise he made to Phyllis Schlafly, God rest her soul.
That's right, Phyllis
and
Schlafly.
And boy, he has really kept that promise more than any president I have seen, you know.
You know, a lot of presidents give you lip service. Oh, yeah, well, I'm pro-life, but I'm personally opposed to abortion, but. And, you know, Tom, it was interesting. I posted on my Facebook page a video about Planned Parenthood. And somebody had called a number of clinics around the country asking them if they did this or did that. No, we just do abortion. We just do abortion. And they couldn't find one clinic that actually did any kind of health care services, you know, either testing for breast cancer or this or that. And we're told that they only do 3% of the abortions in the world, in the country, as if somehow that's okay. And most of the stuff they do is for women's health and all this. Well, that's a lie. And I had a couple of people. One of them is a distant relative, and the other one, who's a young man, a father of three, who completely jumped into the far left. The other one was a young lady that I known from the 90s, who she and her dad and brother used to attend. Was another camp program that I was involved in. And they get down to the bottom line. that that's the woman's totally the woman's choice, and that child, what we call a baby, is a fetus in their eyes, and nothing more than a pile of cells, just a collection of cells, and
right.
It's not a human being until it comes out, and because yeah, so I'm thinking yes, in their eyes, a woman is a judge, jury, and executioner of her child. And it's
Pastor Lear, our own Pastor Lear, and we must pray for him. I hope he makes a full recovery from his surgery. But he
yes.
said, you know, if a child is not safe in his mother's womb, then none of us are safe anywhere.
Well, that's right. And, you know, one of the things is that you judge a culture or a people by how they protect their most vulnerable. And
right.
I think that was some lefty come up with that. And, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And how do we protect the most vulnerable? Well, we tell them they're a bunch of cells. And
that's
then,
right.
And
it's interesting that with the so-called civil libertarian group Black Lives Matter, they don't have a stance on those unborn that are the most vulnerable.
And if they really were interested in it, they just want to destroy the culture and blame everything on the country. If they really were interested in protecting black lives, first they have to address the fact that Planned Parenthood was founded by a racist for racist purposes, not just blacks, but those that were deemed unfit, you know, Southern Mediterraneans, Chinese, Jews, and what have you. And it was elites in both major political parties that supported this eugenics movement, which I've discussed in past shows. And that's a topic these leftists don't want to really touch. And you say, yeah, and they talk about, oh, get your hands off my body, it's my body, you have no right to it. Well, they didn't seem to object too much back in the 20s when they had forced sterilization.
Yeah.
And court ordered in states, and a number of states, I don't know the exact number, I can't recall offhand, had these policies, and it was because certain people were inferior. You know, and that's something they need to be held accountable for. And most people don't even know these existed. And the same people will say, get your hands off my body, will support forced vaccines, support Common Core, support all kinds of things, forced busing. And so
that segues, pal. Did you want to announce on Thursday, I believe Dr. Kishore is going to be speaking about vaccines, is he not?
We only have 2 minutes left. So people who want to learn more about our camp, because this show is heard all over the world, if you're listening to and if you're in the greater Boston area, in fact, mostly New England region, New York, and so forth, and we have a Facebook page, and we have an events. If you just click the events, you'll see where we might be speaking or hosting an event. So if you live in greater Boston, and you know, just check our Facebook page or give us a call. Go to our website and contact us so you can get on our mailing list, campconstitution.net. We have a great summer camp going on. In fact, I'm heading out in a short while to speak to a group. Actually, it's the Lincoln birthday. I think Ronald Reagan was born February 8th, wasn't he? Somewhere around there. So
okay.
They're having a sort of a Lincoln-Reagan dinner, the Berkshire Republicans, and they want me there to speak about Camp Constitution, and our camp is right in their neighborhood. So I'm looking forward to that. So just visit our website and also visit us on YouTube. We're getting about 1,000 views a day, and we want to get 100,000 a day. And the only way to do that is for more people to watch our videos, subscribe, and share our videos. And that's how we do it. That's how a lot of people start off in their, you know, in their bedrooms doing videos. And next thing you know, they're household names in the social media world because they just people talk about them. And I think what we have to offer, Tom, is pretty good. We get a lot of great stuff on our YouTube channel, a lot of informational stuff, historical stuff, what we do at camp, and, of course, what we do year-round, and definitely worth your listenership. So, hey, Tom, thanks very much for being a guest. We'll see you down the road, and we'll actually see you tomorrow at my house. And for you, been listening until next week, may God richly bless you. And again,
Huzzah!
Yeah. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio on WBCQ The Planet.